Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, I chat to awards editor at Variety magazine, Tim Gray, about how Hollywood is likely to fare in 2021, following its strangest of years. Mark Ryle reviews Soul and the Midnight Sky. Plus, we have copies of the DVD of Tenet, the head-scratching Tenet, to give away on DVD. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. right here on Newstalk. Happy New Year to you all. I hope you had a lovely Christmas and I hope you had and will have a lovely 2021, despite the fact that we are back in a serious lockdown again. The good news is that there are a bumper crop of movies for the year ahead and indeed new TV shows. Whether we see them in the cinema or not, it certainly looks unlikely that we'll be seeing in the cinema in the early part of the year. But I mean, some of the titles due to come this year, the new Bond movie, of course, Nomadland with Frances McDormand that's getting rave reviews, the new Wes Anderson movie, French Dispatch, will be here, Top Gun Maverick will be here. Coming to America too, Eddie Murphy reprising the role of the prince from Africa coming to find a lost child in Brooklyn. So there was a lot happening in the cinema. There's loads of stuff happening in TV in the year ahead. Everything from the new series of Succession to the final series of Ozark. So a lot to be excited about on the big and small screen. So, you know, take comfort in that. And now, because it was Christmas and couldn't really go anywhere, I watched a lot of TV, starting with this.
Miss Daphne Bridgerton.
You have no idea what it is to have one's entire life reduced to a single moment.
The time has come for the social season.
Tighter! She to breathe, Mama.
My name is Lady Whistledown. You do not know me, but I know you. This is what they have been trained for since birth. Which young ladies might succeed at securing a match?
You've always amused me, Miss Bridgerton, ever since I was a schoolboy and you were...
Oh, but five?
Miss Bridgerton!
That's a clip from Bridgerton on Netflix, which you may have heard about. So what it is the England, London specifically, at the turn of the century of the previous century, it's the 18s, the 1820s. Well, actually, it's 1813, I think the action starts in. And as you heard from the clip there, it's all about women in particular who are debutanting. They're coming onto the London social scene, hoping to find a husband. This is very unreconstructed times when a woman's sole goal in life, certainly according to this, was to find a man, find a husband. And it's mostly around the Bridgerton family, who in particular their daughter Daphne is to be the star of the season. But her romance takes unscheduled stops, let's say, and she falls in love with a duke who may be unavailable. You may have watched this already because it's been there since, I think, since the week before Christmas. This is popcorny stuff, but it's very entertaining. I mean, some of the dilemmas that occur in it could easily be overcome by people just talking to each other. But anyway, doesn't really matter. It's escapist TV that I think might be perfect for January. It's a bit naff at times, but I watched it over the course of a week with my wife every evening. And you know what? I was never bored. We kept coming back to see what would happen. It's good fun. It's kind of pointless, but it's good fun. There's also, you heard in the clip there, Lady Whistledown. It's narrated by this kind of gossip columnist who publishes this letter, which is quite entertaining. So it's definitely worth a watch. I don't think it'll annoy you. It'll entertain you. Bridgerton, now streaming on Netflix. Also streaming on Netflix that I watched this week was a new movie called We Can Be Heroes, a kids movie directed unusually by Robert Rodriguez. He's the guy who gave us stuff like From Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, he's not usually doing superhero movies for kids. The good news is this is good. This is a real kids superhero movie. It's not for the adults, but it's one to watch with your kids. And it's all about these superheroes who are not of any previous existing universe like Marvel or DC or anything like that. And they're kidnapped and their kids have to team up and use their own powers. And it's a real jolly superhero ride. I think young kids in your life, aged anywhere from 8 to 12, I think would enjoy it. It's kind of a jolly superhero movie, not too violent or scary, kind of old-fashioned superhero movie. We Can Be Heroes, and any movie that kind of borrows its title from a David Bowie song can't really be that bad, can it? Also on TV, I did watch both editions of Mrs. Brown's Boys that were on Christmas Day and New Year's Eve. You know, I've said to you before, I think that show gets an unjustified hard time from critics and all sorts of people. And I don't actually, whenever I watch it, I don't actually find it that bad. I mean, it's not hilarious, but sometimes I laugh at the jokes. I have to say this year, it was kind of diminishing returns. It's more the plots, particularly the one on New Year's Eve. I just, like, it was paper thin. You kind of felt like, what was that even about? There was some storyline about a child from a possible union in the past showing up to the Mrs. Brown household, and it just kind of went nowhere. I just, you know, I'm not great. I'm sorry to say. Let me know if you might have watched Mrs. Brown's Boys and what you thought of it. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. Now, something that I did enjoy a lot was on RTE1 a few nights ago, and it's on the player, called The Real Field. Now, this was all about the actual story that inspired John B. Keane's play, The Field, and then later, obviously, Jim Sheridan's wonderful rendering of that play with the great Richard Harris playing the Bull McCabe. And it was John B. Keane's son, Billy Keane, going kind of on a journey of exploration about the real case, which is about the death of this unfortunate man, and Mossy Moore, in Remore in County Kerry, and he had a land dispute and he showed up dead later on, and there was a chief suspect or someone everyone thought was guilty, Dan Foley, who was never convicted, and to this day his relatives say he had nothing to do with it. And they go back and look at all that, and they also looked at some of the scenes in the actual filming of The Field, and I really liked the archive clips of Richard Harris on set being, well, Richard Harris. And also an interesting piece of social history. There was no solving to the crime, but I guess that's the rub of the whole thing. It's well worth a watch. The Real Field, now available on the RTE player. And then finally, we have copies of Tenet to give away. The head-scratching but entertaining movie by Christopher Nolan earlier this year. It's now last year, of course, because we are the 2nd of January. It was a remarkable film. It was complicated. At times it lost me, but it's certainly one to watch, Tenet. Now, as I say, we have 3 copies of the DVD to give away. People still watch DVDs. People say that to me all the time. You'd be surprised. People still like to own things. And you can own a copy of Tenet. All you have to do is simply tell me. Christopher Nolan's previous movie was called A. Dunkirk or B. Waterloo. His movie from 2017, was it A. Dunkirk or B. Waterloo? If you'd like to be in with a chance of winning a copy of Tenet on DVD, simply text your answer followed by your name to 53106. And the wonderful Anne-Marie Kane will pick out a winner. Now then, finally in TV, I gather a lot of you were probably watching the Doctor Who New Year's Day special yesterday, Revolution of the Daleks, which I didn't watch. I'm out of the loop with Doctor Who. I know Jodie Whittaker is great in it. By all accounts, it was a pretty good episode. What had Doctor Who on my mind was that it was announced that John Bishop is going to enter the Doctor Who saga, which I think is great. Now, he's not going to play the Doctor, although that could work as well, but he's going to be a character called Dan, who's going to be embroiled in the Doctor's adventures and faces evil aliens beyond his wildest nightmares. And Bishop tweeted that he's over the moon to be entering the TARDIS, which I bet he is, because for an English person to be in Doctor Who is kind of like being put on a stamp, I imagine. John Bishop, God bless him, has been very ill with coronavirus. He tweeted about it that it was flooring him and it was the most serious illness he ever had. He appears to be on the mend and we wish him well. I used to text John Bishop regularly. This is not a name-dropping piece of the show. It's just, I used to work on the Tom Dunn show many years ago with my good friend Tom Dunn. John Bishop was a regular guest. It was right when he was starting to break. And we'd have him on every other week. But then he became Interstellar. And I still had his number. And last year I texted him to see if he wanted to come on and talk about his favourite movie. Sent him this lovely long text. Still hasn't responded. But anyway, Good actor as well, but a very funny man. And he's welcome on the show anytime.
I just got an iPod. It holds 24,000 songs. I've got 6 CDs. And you just buy stuff, don't you? Like we bought a new fridge. We bought a new fridge and we had a fridge. There was nothing wrong with the fridge that we had. It just wasn't massive. So my wife wanted a new fridge. She wanted a new silver fridge that's the size of a bungalow. So, so she wanted a new fridge, and because I like sex, I said, yeah. And we got this fridge, and the best thing about this fridge, the big selling point about this fridge, is that you can get instant cold water direct from the fridge, which is, I've got to be honest, that hasn't half changed our lives. Because what we've decided to do is to put the fridge in the kitchen next to the sink. I'm probably saving myself a yard of walking every day.
John Bishop there talking about fridges. And I was talking about him because he's going to be in the new season of Doctor Who, which is filming again once he's out of a sickbed because the poor man had coronavirus. And then finally, I just wanted to say thank you for everyone who got in touch on Christmas Day or around Christmas Day. I did a Screen Time special playing some of my favourite Christmas movies and Christmas music and Christmas TV specials. And a lot of people seemed to be, I don't know, at the radio while they were basting the turkey or basting something. And a lot of people got in touch. So thank you for that. And a lot of people really enjoyed the clip of the Christmas special from Only Fools and Horses called Dates, where Del Boy's off to meet Raquel for the first time and him and Rodney are getting ready for two very different dates. And it seemed to be the highlight of the show. So if the clock allows for kind of the January blues, why don't I play this for you just again quickly?
I thought you got a date with that Nerisberg.
Yeah, I have.
Well, you better hurry up and get changed, don't you?
I am changed.
We're going out like that?
Well, what's wrong with me?
Well, you look like an hooligan.
It is the fashion. Haven't you read about it? It's called the James Dean look.
Yeah, but when they said the James Dean look, they meant before the crash. I can't see you getting very far with that Nerys bird dressed like that.
Oi, you just keep it out, right? Let me lead my own life.
All right, all right. Maybe she goes for blokes who look like Barney Rubble.
Going out. I am going out.
Well, hurry up and change. I'll take those clothes down the laundrette for you.
I am wearing these clothes.
Yeah? Where are you taking them then, scrubbing? Dill boy's going out to lunch with a world famous actress.
Yeah? Mm. You got my socks and pants in there?
Yeah, I've got them, boy. Mm. See you later.
Yeah. So who is it then? Meryl Streep?
No. Raquel Turner.
Are you kidding me?
No, straight up.
The Raquel Turner.
Well, yeah, have you heard of her?
No. She been in anything?
Yes, loads of things, but nothing that you would have seen her in, Rodney.
And what's that supposed to mean?
She has not been on Top of the Pops or repeats a Batman.
That's from Only Fools and Horses, the great David Jason there, and Buster Merrifield, and Nicholas Lyndhurst, of course, who plays Rodney. Just, I played that Christmas Day and people loved it, so I said I'd play it again. Up next, Mark Ryle is back with some new releases.
Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Now you're listening to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. We turn to new releases. Mark Ryle was off last week, as was I, to all intents and purposes. We were both you know, feeding on festive goodies and all that kind of stuff. But he's back, I'm delighted to say. And also we're going to look at two movies that were released last week, but they're very important movies. They're Midnight Sky, George Clooney's new movie, which he directed and stars in, which was released on the 23rd of December, and Soul on Disney Plus, which landed, interestingly enough, on Christmas Day. Mark Royal, first of all, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John. I can't remember how to do this.
Just take your hands away, you'll be fine. I take your hands off the wheel and let me, you know, guide you through the purple rain or something. Okay, let's start with Midnight Sky. It was in the cinemas for a while, as far as I know, a week beforehand, but it, all intents and purposes, landed on Netflix on the 23rd of December.
Mm-hmm, yep. It is a, I would I suppose the best way of describing it is... It's Roland Emmerich on a budget. It's a disaster movie, but I'm not going to make that obvious joke because, to be honest, John, you deserve better. It is George Clooney's seventh movie as a director. And I think for me, The Midnight Sky, it tips the balance over to more misses than hits. It's a competently made movie and it has a very compelling premise, but it's very uninspiring and predictable.
Yes, I would largely go along with that. We'll get to the close to section of it in a second, but just kind of give us a quick presse of what's going on exactly. George Clooney is holed up in the Arctic.
What is going on is that we find gorgeous George in the year 2049 sporting some very impressive facial hair, and he's eating lonely microwave dinners on his own in a scientific observatory in the Arctic, I think it is. Because an unspecified apocalyptic climate event has left the Earth uninhabitable, and George is the last man standing. Meanwhile, a number of manned space missions to find another habitable planet have all been lost, bar one, and now that one mission is returning to a doomed planet, and George is desperately trying to make contact with the crew to warn them not to come home because it won't be there.
Yeah, well, that is a perfect summation of what goes on. So what was your problem with the movie?
I think elements of it are very, very good, but some of it is appalling. It's a film of two halves, and really only one of those halves works. The thread with lonely George is pretty great. It's downbeat and it's depressing and nihilistic, and it is gripping. But then on the other hand, you have the space stuff with Felicity Jones and David Oyelowo and Kyle Chandler, and it's all terribly clumsy and cliched. They are all excellent actors in their own right, but none of their characters have any real discernible personalities. And it's not helped at all by the fact that these space segments have the look and feel of a TV movie. Also, I have to mention the musical score, which I thought was really oddly distracting and off-putting. For some reason, the sound doesn't quite match up to what's happening on screen, and it's doing that to a distracting extent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, space sounds, they have to add up, you know, if you're going to orchestrate space, it's a hard thing to do. Just ask John Williams. I'm with you for the most part in what you said there, like George, where he's by himself and maybe visited by others, who knows? And it sounds kind of like that might be very boring as you describe it, but it isn't. He's wrestling with the past. He's wrestling with what's in front of him. It's brilliant. You can't take your eyes off him. But yeah, the bits in space with those great actors are just really boring. And I rarely say this, but I was constantly checking my watch going, when is this over, you know, or when's George back on screen? You know, it's two movies and one of them is very good and one of them is very bad.
Exactly, yeah. The other problem with it is that there are no surprises here at all. And from a very early point, I knew exactly what was going to happen to who and when it was going to happen. And because everything is so well signposted, there's really very little dramatic tension at all.
Yeah, I didn't see as many as those signposts, but you've keener sight than I do for such things.
I've watched more bad movies.
Yeah, that might be it. I don't know. But anyway, we're both decidedly downbeat about it. So what would you say stars-wise?
I am going to give it 2.5, mainly for the half with George.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to put it. I was going to give it 2, but the fact that half of the movie is very good because of George, maybe I'll give it 2.5 too. That's 2.5 from both me and Mark for The Midnight Sky, now streaming on Netflix. It's been there a week, so let us know if you might have watched it. John_Fardy or on Twitter, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. Now, something we're decidedly not downbeat about is this.
Sorry, I zoned out a little back there.
Joe Gardner, where have you been?
I've been teaching middle school band. But on the weekends,
You got a suit? Get a suit, Teach. A good suit. Back here tonight, first show's at 9, sound check's at 7. We'll see how you do.
Yes! Woohoo!
You see that, Dad? That's what I'm talking about! You know what that's gonna say? Joe Gardner! You're never gonna believe what just happened. I did it! I got the gig!
That was a clip from Soul, which was released on Disney Plus on Christmas Day, of all days. It's a brave new world. Mark, tell us what's going on in Soul. This is an animated movie, of course.
It's a Pixar. It's directed by Pete Docter, who's the current head of Pixar, and he directed some top-tier titles like Up and Inside Out.
Fantastic films. Exactly. And I just do that annoying thing where I interviewed him once and he was just a man in love with making movies. Like, he just, it just oozed out of his pores, his delight at having the job he had. Yeah. Anyway, that's just a showbiz aside. Bono told me not to name drop, so I'll move on, you know?
Okay. All right. So what's going on here? Jamie Foxx is voices a character called Joe Gardner. He's a part-time music teacher, and he has dreams of becoming a full-time musician. Then his dream comes true when he gets a gig playing with a renowned and respected jazz musician called Dorothea Williams. And then Joe falls into a manhole and dies. And then after that, things get interesting because Joe's soul form manages to escape en route to the great beyond, but then gets stuck in, I suppose, the great before, where new souls are given their spark before beginning life. And then Joe is assigned as a mentor to a troublesome soul who's voiced by Tina Fey, and he sees this as his ticket back into the land of the living.
Yes. Now, the way you describe it, again, really great description of it. He spends time on these descriptions, listeners. So that could either be an unheralded mess, or it could either be a work of genius. So which is it?
Well, the first act is something else. I'd say it's literally something else because the character design and the sheer imagination on display here is just extraordinary. And in their infinite wisdom, Pixar have decided that a soul looks a lot like a blue cotton bud. And I suppose who am I to argue? And then there's these admin staff in charge of this waiting room for souls, and they all look like mural paintings brought to life. And I think the reason for this is, I'm paraphrasing here, is that they are the coming together of all quantized fields of the universe appearing in a form that our feeble human brain can comprehend.
Talking of feeble brains, say that again. No, I'm only joking.
It does begin to get a bit heavy and metaphysical. So when things change a gear in the second act, it's a very good move and it's a welcome change of pace. And I have to say the midsection of Soul is different again. And it's at this point for me that it got really, really funny and I laughed a lot. I suppose it's a cartoon comedy about death and the afterlife and the meaning of happiness and what it means to live a life fulfilled. And it deals with these very weighty themes. But this is the kind of thing that Pixar does really, really well. And I think after a couple of lackluster disappointments like Onward and Toy Story 4, I think that that indefinable magic element is back, thankfully.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And, you know, there are really heavy adult themes here. Like, yeah. At times I was thinking, is this a kid's movie? Now, as is often the case, I had child number one, who's 8, watching it with me, and he loved it. So there's definitely loads in it for kids. But, I mean, this is a cartoon or an animated movie that the shadow or the soul of Carl Jung pops up at one point and starts talking about archetypes and psychology. Like, this is deep, but it's also really funny. funny. And the midsection you talk about where they're kind of back in the real world, I was howling at times like I would at, you know, an adult movie, I guess. So you saying that this is them being back to the high water mark of Up or Inside Out, I completely agree with you. And I thought the voice cast was brilliant. And there's a turn, cameos doesn't do it justice, but Graham Norton does a role in it, and he's brilliantly wonderful in it.
He is. Yeah, I assumed that he showed up. I thought it was going to be one of those things where, you know, sometimes they cast somebody in the UK and differently, and maybe it probably would have been somebody like Jimmy Kimmel in America. But I think, as far as I know, he's doing it everywhere, and he's actually very good in the role.
He's brilliant. He's a great voice cast. You know, the only thing that I thought was strange, and it's a really small thing, I thought it was going to be all about soul music, but he's a jazz musician, which I thought was, I thought it was going to be about soul music. That was how it was built. But anyway, that's of no real consequence.
Different kind of soul. Going back to your point about parents and kids, I think it's probably going to cause a lot of awkward questions for parents. Like, you know, what happened to Granny? And is that where Granny is now after she fell into that big sleep, that kind of thing. And on the face of it, it is one of those cartoons that will appeal more to parents than it will to children. And it, as I said, kids might find it a bit heavy and philosophical, but then again, I suppose you shouldn't underestimate what kids can get their heads around.
Absolutely not. Like, kids love Inside Out and Up for those very same reasons, because they has heavy duty stuff. And don't forget, Mark, I don't need to school you in classic philosophy, but Aristotle, you know, it begins with a sense of wonder. And he said that children make the best philosophers. And it's kind of true, you know. But anyway, I'm fraying into weird territory there. Anyway, what would you say stars wise?
I'm going to give it a 4. I think it's a thankfully, it's a return to form for Pixar. And I hope going forward, they go with, you know, quality over quantity. I think they suffer when they release too many movies.
Absolutely. And they clearly thought about this one. And Pete Docter does a great job in this. And it has wild imagination in it. But sometimes wild imagination, it can get away from them. But this is a great story and lots of good wit in it. And beautifully, looks beautiful as well. So I'm going to give it 4 as well, because I loved it. So that
we're in concert.
We are. And, you know, it's 2nd of January, 1st, 2nd of January here. So maybe it's a sign of the year ahead. We're getting on the same page. You know, that couples counselling for film critics, I think, is really paying off.
Work for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, let me say it again for the second time. Happy New Year, Mark.
Happy New Year, John.
Mark Royal there, chatting to me about The Midnight Sky and also Soul. The Midnight Sky is on Netflix, we gave it 2.5, and Soul is on Disney Plus, for which we gave 4, and we were raving about it. Up next, we go to Hollywood to see if it can survive 2021. Now you're listening to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movies show. Now, 2020 was a hell of a year, not least of all for Hollywood, with the pandemic causing havoc with production and release dates. And of course, the movie-making business was already in a state of, let's say, growing anxiety due to what was being billed as the streaming wars. So how will 2021 fare? Well, we go live now to Tinseltown, where I'm delighted to be joined by Tim Gray, the awards editor at Variety, often known as the Bible of Hollywood. Hello, Tim. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I'm always happy to talk with you.
Well, thank you. So listen, I was looking back and I was talking to you around this time last year about, you know, what I mentioned in the intro, the streaming wars and the proclivity of companies putting their movies on streaming sites. And you were saying, you used the phrase, it was like the Wild West in Hollywood. People weren't sure what was going on. Fast forward 12 months and this little thing called COVID hit and, you know, the world has never been the same again. How topsy-turvy a year was it for Hollywood?
I mean, it was a very crazy year for Hollywood. I think next year is still going to be crazy for Hollywood. I'm hoping that audiences are going to benefit from this, because in the past year, the Hollywood people have realized that they've had a business plan that's been in place for about 100 years. And they're realizing, you know what, we might have to make some alterations in that plan. So I think there is going to be streaming wars in 2021. I think you're going to see theater owners trying to lure people back into theaters by making them offers, maybe at discounted prices. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in Hollywood, you know, I keep going back to... Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Somebody says to him, "What's the plan?" He said, "I don't know. I'm making it up as I go along." And I think that's kind of Hollywood's philosophy, is like, you know, we're making things up and let's see what works.
We'll stumble from crisis to crisis. I know a lot of organizations like that. You say the consumer or the cinema goer is going to win. Is that because, one, they're going to get discounts to get them back into the cinema, but also that a lot of stuff is going to go to streaming and will be spoiled for choice? Or what do you mean when you say the viewers are going to be the winners?
Well, I think Ireland's probably going to see more streaming services, because right now you have Netflix and Amazon, right?
Yeah, we have Disney Plus as well.
Do you? Yeah. Now, what about HBO Max and Apple TV?
We have Apple TV. We don't have HBO Max yet, though.
Yeah, see, I think all of those, they're going to get competitive. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Warner Brothers announced that all of its movies in 2021 are going to be released simultaneously to theaters and to streaming.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers says, okay, this is just for the year. This is just a temporary thing. But the fact that they're willing to do that, basically what they're trying to do is beef up HBO Max, because that's where all these Warner Brothers films will go to. And so, you know, because now when people talk about streaming, Netflix is, you know, as a synonym for streaming.
Yeah.
I think all these other services want to be primal. They want to be synonymous with streaming as well. Mm. So they're really going to beef those up. And, you know, in this past year, it used to be that it would be about 3 months from the time a movie hit theaters till it went into streaming. And this past year, it became 17 days.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, you have 3 weekends at the theater and then it'll go to streaming. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And they're going to be experimenting with prices. They're going to see what they can do to lure people both to theaters and lure them to their streaming services.
Yeah. And Tim, like, I've asked you this before, but given what you're saying there now, and, you know, HBO wanting to almost rival Netflix, and that the other streaming services wanting to be, you know, like Netflix, and that Netflix not just be synonymous with streaming, that other people, you think of other streaming services, well, does that not really hasten the death of cinema? Like, are people still going to go to theaters in this new age of HBO Max?
I mean, look, I could be wrong, but I think theaters will survive because, you know, I've worked at Variety a long time.
Yes.
But even before I got there, people were always predicting the end of movie going. You know, when television in the early 50s became so popular,
yeah,
in America, everybody said, this is the end of it. And then with home taping in the,
sure,
80s. It's like, this is the end of it. But I think people have a primal need to go to a theater, mm-hmm, and experience a movie with other people. And it may not be, you know, every week, and they may not do it out of habit. But I think big kind of event movies they'll want to see. There's some movies coming up in 2021 that they postponed from 2020. I mean, like the Top Gun sequel, which, mm-hmm, has been delayed for years, the James Bond movie, No Time to Die. Steven Spielberg did a new version of West Side Story.
Yes.
And I think people are going to want to see those on the big screen. You know, you just get a different experience in terms of the cinematography, the sound, the whole experience. So I think people will still go to the theater.
Yeah, well, a very sanguine thing to say. And I'm with you because, you know, people still love that darkened room and that big screen and all. Let me just look back at last year briefly. How financially hit were some of the studios by all this, do you think? Are any of them in danger, or did they just have so much money anyway, it's all right?
I don't know that any studio is in danger of going under, but they're, mm, certainly having to rewrite things because, you know, I mean, studios, they're always figuring out how to maximize their income.
Yeah.
And so now they're coming up with alternate plans. Now, for a movie like, you know, like Top Gun or the James Bond movie, it's like, you know, they're still paying interest on the thing, because these things are made at a loss, and they figure we'll make up for the loss when it opens. So they're still having to pay interest, but you know, it's not crippling. It's not going to shut them down. But they're coming up with alternate plans, and a lot of these things have been talked about for literally decades. You know, movie theater owners. For example, the studios talk to them about, wait, why is somebody paying the same amount of money to see a little film as they would to see an Avengers Marvel movie? You know, wouldn't it make sense to charge more for the Marvel movie and less for the small movie? And, you know, I think they are probably continuing those conversations now. The conversations kind of came to a standstill, but I think they're going to come up again in terms of pricing for audiences and ways of getting audiences to buy like kind of season tickets,
right.
where you go see 10 movies for a price. They were experimenting with that for the last few years, but I think you're going to see more experimentation. And again, I hope that that helps the audience.
Wow. So you would have a scenario where, hypothetically speaking, you might pay, I don't know, $20 to see a movie like Parasite or The Lighthouse, to take two vaguely art housey ones from last year, and then $40 or €40 to see Wonder Woman 84?
Well, wait a minute. Are you talking about $40 or €40 to see it at home on screen or in a movie theater?
Well, I'm asking you, are you saying in a theater or streaming?
No, I'm saying in a theater. I mean, wow. I think with streaming, they're going to come up with a kind of case by case basis, because
but that seems
they even did that.
That seems bizarre, though, that you would be charged different admissions to a theater for different movies.
Well, it you know, I don't know that it's going to take over, but they've been talking about experimenting with this for, I would say, at least 20 years.
Wow.
And theater owners are always a little reluctant, because it's like, wait, if I can charge, you know, €15 to see a film, why would I charge €10 to people to see it, because it's a smaller film? I want the higher price. But I do think they will do that, and they'll experiment with pricing at home, because, okay, you know, I think, I can't remember, Mulan.
Yeah. It was €22 here to buy it before everyone else.
Yeah, I think that's about what the equivalent was in the States. But, you know, there was also a movie, the Trolls, movie, Trolls World Tour.
Yeah,
and I think that did not charge as much as Mulan.
Yeah.
But you know, but that movie did very well, and you know, Donna Langley, who's the head of production at Universal Studios, which released Trolls World Tour. Mm-hmm. She said, look, this is a 100-year-old business plan coming up against 10-year-old technology, and we're having to adjust constantly. You know, we don't know how to make those two work together, but we will.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a smart point, you know, and so they are there. I think there's going to be a lot of experimentation in 2021.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about, you know, Trolls World Tour is that presumably they had, because it was just direct into your home and you paid whatever it was, $20 or $15, I can't remember what it was either, but they weren't sharing any of that with a theater owner. So presumably it's quite attractive to people like Universal.
Yeah, but you know, again, they're talking about how much to share with theater owners. I think the big difference in Hollywood in the coming year, most audience members won't see, is that they're going to be redefining their contracts with theater owners and with talent, because right now, in the past, a lot of the talent would get paid a certain amount of money, and then if the movie passes X million at the box office, then they get a bonus. And if it passes 100 million, then they get a different bonus, and 200 million. And right now, I mean, there's no way a movie opening in 2020 is going to have passed $1 billion.
Yeah.
So I think the talents, the actors, the directors, are going to be renegotiating terms of what constitutes a bonus.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's going to be a lot of readjusting going on behind the scenes, but I don't think it's going to affect the movies that are being made.
Yeah. And tell me this, you know, the big tentpole movie of the year once COVID hit was Tenet. And Christopher Nolan's insistence that it get into cinemas and all that. And it was the movie billed to save Hollywood from its terrible year. You know, it's a big question, but do you think Tenet saved cinema in 2020?
No, I think Tenet was like the canary in the coal mine. It's like, okay, let's put it out there and see what happens.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, the movie made, I think it's like $360 million worldwide, which is not bad. Mm. You know, I think for a COVID movie, that's not bad. But of course, a lot of people say, well, that's a huge disappointment. They were hoping for more. And it's like, well, in a normal year, they would hope for a lot more. But in a COVID year, but see, it's like we don't know how to measure it. We don't know what measures success these days. So that's why their contracts are going to be difficult.
Yeah.
But I also think Tenet was, okay, it answered some questions. And for me personally, I still have not seen the movie, but and it played in theaters that I could drive to, but it's like, I'm not going to risk my life to go see any movie. So I can wait for that one.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you what you thought of it. We're actually giving away DVD copies of it on the show tonight. That old-fashioned thing, a DVD. Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, you
That's
can't
a nice
enter.
Prize.
Yeah, but it. Yeah. My take on it was that it was great to see, but it was too complicated. So when you do get to see it, we'll talk again. Listen, I've one more thing to ask you, but en route to that last question, let me dovetail slightly. Tom Cruise's recent outburst on the set where he was screaming about COVID and all, has that, terminally damaged his career, or is it just a Hollywood tantrum that everyone will put to bed?
I mean, I kind of think it's, you know, in the social media era, I mean, everybody is scandalous for 15 minutes. and so he was a big scandal, but I don't think it affects anybody. I mean, I've talked to people in Hollywood who said, oh, he leaked that himself to the press to make him seem like a hero. And I think that's possible.
Yeah.
And other people said, hey, you know, look, he's protecting an investment. It's like if people get sick on the set, they have to close it down. It's going to be very costly. So, I mean, he's entitled to yell at people. And other people thought it was just a tantrum. You know, I personally think it's fine. You know,
didn't hit anyone, you know.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, it could have been worse. And again, of all the huge Hollywood scandals since I started Variety in the 80s. I mean, this is not in the top 100,
no,
I don't think.
No, absolutely not. And then finally, we always talk to you around Oscar time, which is a while away, and it's been pushed out longer this year. What's the Oscars going to be like this year, do you think? Or it's possibly impossible to tell, but I just mean in terms of like how they're even going to choose the best movie. I mean, have you any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, they've been campaigning for movies, and there's some movies, you know, like Mank on Netflix and Nomadland from Searchlight, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. There's some really good movies there, so they will have enough to choose from. Variety a couple of weeks ago ran a story saying they're definitely going to hold an in-person Oscar ceremony.
Wow, okay.
You know, he got it from a good source, and they said yes. And then there was so much blowback on that. I talked to somebody at the Academy who I think he was told this by a good source, but my source at the Academy said, look, we don't know what's going to happen next month. So we can't predict what's going to happen April 25th, I think it is. Mm. So it's, I think one segment of it will be in person because they did that with the Emmys here. I don't know if you watch the Emmys, but, you know, part of it was at a theater, but it was very sparsely attended. I think there were like 10 people in the audience. And a lot of it was from home. So I think they're weighing their options, but I honestly believe they have not made up their mind yet what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, look, you're always fascinating to talk to, and you don't get this from anyone else because he's our man on the ground. And he seems to be saying Hollywood is a beast, but it is a beast that will very much survive. Tim Gray, awards editor at Variety, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Tim Gray, the awards editor of Variety, talking to me about, well, everything that's going on in Hollywood and what might happen in the new year. I love talking to Tim because he talks to a lot of people in the know. So it's nice to talk to somebody in the know. I'm clearly not in the know, but, you know, 5 degrees of separation and all that kind of stuff. Or I guess it would be 3 degrees. Anyway, I digress. That is it for this week. Next week, I will be talking to the wonderful actress Vanessa Kirby about her role in a powerful new movie that lands next week called Pieces of a Woman. Leave you with some music from the movies. Before I do, I'll just remind you that this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. right here on Newstalk. I'm open all week long on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. Play out with a little Roy Orbison from the movie Nerve. I think it was 2016 or 2015. Who knows? It was a so-so movie, but a great song that I nearly got married to, but we chose something else in the end. But this was on the shortlist. Once again, Happy New Year, and I will talk to you all next week.
Every time I look into I feel love.